If you're gonna tell a story, come with some attitude, man.
I wanted to create a story that felt like something that he would have wanted to do. And I also wanted to do that. You know, I wanted to, with my own medium, try to find a way to be improvisational, spontaneous, impressionistic, and kind of let the music dictate as much as I was dictating.
Gunfights, car chases, a shady journalist, an artist on the edge. These are not the things you would expect from a film about a jazz musician. But director and star Don Cheadle created a portrait of Miles Davis that the legendary trumpeter would have loved to be a part of. In the next hour, we'll hear about how it all came together and a lot of music. I'm Josh Jackson, and welcome to Miles Ahead. Miles Ahead took a long time from idea to screen.
2006, Aaron, Cheryl, and I, we were getting an award for a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at the Waldorf.
Miles' nephew, Vince Wilburn Jr.
When you come off stage, you go to press, and so somebody said, well, Vince, who do you see playing your uncle in a biopic, in a motion picture? I said Don Cheadle. Never met him. Didn't know him. That was 2006. So it's been that long. But he teases me about me picking him and he not knowing anything about it and the pressure and, you know. But he handled it, man. He kicked some booty, man.
Yeah, he calls it offhand. I think it was strategic.
Don Cheadle produced, directed, co-wrote, and starred in the film.
Well, there was a flurry of activity. People, you know, calling. My agents called. They had received a call from the estate. And we all got together at a restaurant and basically they... You know, Vince was like, you heard what I said? I was like, yeah, I heard what you said. And they went on to pitch some ideas for me about approaches to the film, concepts they had had. And they were all fine, but I wasn't really at that time either interested in doing another quote-unquote biopic. I'd done four or five at that point. I said, well, I think if we're going to do a movie about Miles Davis, it has to be fire. You know, it's got to be a gangster movie or heist movie or shoot 'em up or just something that's just not the run of the mill. And then he met Dizzy Gillespie and then he went to, you know, and played at Birdland and then he played here. I just didn't want to sort of click off the all the boxes of Miles Davis' life and call that a film. So they were like, oh, that sounds interesting. And how would you do it? And I was like, oh, you guys are actually entertaining this? So I just, you know, kind of pitched them quickly my ideas of it and how I wanted to use the music in ways that I wanted to make sure that we covered all eras of music, not just, you know, be sort of locked into whatever period it was that we were depicting and bring in other kinds of music too that, you know, wasn't specifically Miles Davis music, that was music that Miles inspired and the kinds of musicians that he inspired. And they said, okay, that sounds great. I said, okay, that sounds great to me too. So if anyone comes up with something like that, you know, give me a call. And I left and I was almost to my house and I thought, well, who's going to do that though? Who's going to come in and pitch that and actually go do it? So I picked up my phone and as I was calling, they were calling me and they said, well, who's going to do that though, Don? And I said, I guess I have to do it. And they're like, yeah, I think you have to do it. If that's what you want to do, you have to do it.
Seven Steps to Heaven, performed by Miles Davis, from the soundtrack to the film Miles Ahead. Not to give much away, but the main story in Miles Ahead takes place in the late 1970s. Miles Davis has been a recluse for 5 years, and now the record company and the public wonder if he'll ever return. Actor Ewan McGregor plays a dishonest journalist that worms his way into Miles' life. A sleazy record producer steals Miles' tape of new music, and Miles does everything possible to get it back. He's an artist haunted by memories of his past and in danger of having his future stolen away.
Reading the script at first, I remember feeling like, okay, there's some stuff in here that it's a little offbeat from what I was expecting.
Miles' son, Aaron Davis.
It's just like Miles' music. It didn't really get into my head what he was trying to do until I kind of saw it happen and then reflected on it and then saw it again. Yeah, well, I think it's just part of how Don thought he was going to tell this story. Like, he's going to make a movie that Miles would like to star in, you know, about himself, or see a movie about himself. Like, not so much just relaying exactly how his life was. I mean, I don't think he would want anybody to watch that, even as great as it was. I think he would rather have some vibe with it, something different, you know, bring a little bit of color into it, bring some excitement. So, I mean, more than there already was, which is hard to believe, but yeah.
Freylon Broon, performed by Miles Davis, from the soundtrack to the film Miles Ahead. Vince Wilburn Jr. knew that his uncle Miles Davis could be played by Don Cheadle after seeing some of his roles in the 90s.
I saw him in a movie called The Devil in a Blue Dress, and he was Mouse. And Mouse reminded me so much of my uncle, man. You know. And then he was a African-American Chinese food owner in Rush Hour. And there was one scene when he told Chris Tucker, "I'm gonna kick your ass," and he told Jackie Chan, "Then I'm gonna kick your ass." And but the facial expressions was like, "Oh, this is Chief. We call Uncle Miles Chief." Yeah, I said, "This is the Chief."
When you're quiet, you know, you have a lot of thoughts, and they can sometimes be fighting each other, you know, like a war.
Don spent a lot of time digging deep into the mind of Miles Davis for the role.
Well, I mean, I read everything I could read and watched everything that I could watch about him, and talked to his son and his daughter and, you know, his nephew Vince a lot about him. And for me as an actor, I'm always trying to figure out, well, if this guy's a badass, and where is he the most vulnerable? Where is he tender? You know, if this guy is supposedly a saint, where is he the devil? You know, because I think we're we're all of that. We're all everything. We have the capacity to be all of those things. And when you listen to Miles' music, and you know, particularly the ballads, you know that that can't come from someone who is just some, you know, calcified hard ass who doesn't understand poetry and gentleness and this humor as well. There's a book that a woman had written where she had asked all these jazz musicians the wishes of these musicians. And she asked Miles what his biggest wish was, and he said, to be white, which it was not a serious answer. It could not have been. But it was so acerbic, and I can imagine what her face was like when he said it, you know, which is why he would say it. So something like that just kind of keyed me into the wit and the sense of humor he had. And then, you know, he was somebody who you think of as the coolest dude in the world. And he was talking about, as he was coming up playing, wondering, is it more cool to, when you're keeping the beat, to tap your whole foot, your whole shoe, or to tap your foot inside your shoe? Now, that's not something that the coolest person in the world thinks about, how my foot tapping looks. So, you know, that just tells you that there's more going on, to me anyway, things like that. And there's tons of things like that, but kinds of examples like that, which said there's obviously a fully three-dimensional, you know, human being here, maybe four-dimensional from what he was able to do.
Thank you.
Miles Ahead, performed by Miles Davis. Coming up, more conversation with Don Cheadle and company about making the film. I'm Josh Jackson, and you're listening to Miles Ahead. You're listening to Miles Ahead on your public radio station, WVTF, on this edition of Last Quarter. WVTF is supported by Kendall at Lexington, maintenance-free residential retirement living with comfort knowing care is there, together transforming the experience of aging. Kendall at Lexington. We also receive support from Radford University's Communication Sciences and Disorders Master's Program, where students provide care for people with communication and swallowing disorders. radford.edu/gradcollege. Finally, we thank the Legacy Foundation, LLC, a boutique financial firm serving professionals in the university community for 30 years. Details at yourlegacyfoundation.com. Welcome back to Miles Ahead. I'm Josh Jackson. There's plenty of action and intrigue in Miles Ahead, but the central thread is the love story of Miles Davis and Frances Taylor. They were married from 1958 to 1968. Aaron Davis is Miles' son.
Having it not be a traditional biopic where it was like, you know, born in Alton, raised in East St. Louis, you know, playing on the in the river, studying in school, then going to Juilliard and leaving in Charlie Park, you know, all that stuff. Like, that would have taken so long, I think, that you almost can't give it enough respect. And to touch on his relationship with Irene, who he didn't marry, but he had three children with, you know, which he kind of touches on in a very cool way in the movie, which I won't spoil, but he touches on that. But Frances, they really wanted to showcase that, because that was very important.
Director and star Don Cheadle.
By both of their accounting, she was kind of the one that got away, kind of. And as far as the role that she played for us in the narrative, the period of time that she was with Miles was approximately when he was with the first great group that he's with Coltrane and Cannonball, and when they were playing sort of what is considered by many to be his most iconic music. That was sort of the beginning of their relationship, and that spanned a number of years till when he was playing with, you know, Tony and Herbie and Wayne and Ron, and it's considered sort of the next great. There are many eras in between. There are, you know, different groups in between, but those two groups are considered by many to be the sort of pillars of that jazz ethos anyway. And she was with him from from when that began to when that era ended. And ostensibly after she was gone and after he stopped playing with that band, he kind of never played acoustic again. He never just, you know, played that kind of quote-unquote jazz again. He moved away from that, moved into electric, and, you know, started playing many, many, many different ways after that. But their relationship spanned that period of time musically. She was also, for us, sort of the personification of that music, that voice that he was looking for and trying to find a way to get back to.
Thank you.
Soleil, performed by Miles Davis, from the soundtrack to the film Miles Ahead. Aaron Davis manages the Miles Davis estate with his sister Cheryl and cousin Vince Wilburn Jr.
I know that Emma Yahtzee had said, the woman who plays Frances, she's great. She said he was directing almost like Miles, and she found that to be very helpful as far as working on a movie about Miles. So.
Miles Ahead is Don Cheadle's debut as a film director. He took a lesson from the way Miles ran his bands.
Directing a film is, it's not like, you know, playing the solo chorus over So What or something. It's very structured, and there's a lot of, obviously there are things that have to happen in certain sequences and ways that you have to work to allow everything to happen. But within that framework, you know, it was about trying to make sure that everyone, all of the keys and everyone that was working on the film got to bring their craft to it. You know, I didn't really want to be a dictator and lay out everything that had to be done. I think the script did a good job of letting everyone know what the world is, and this is the container, and this is how we're trying to tell this story, and this is our approach. But within that, best answer wins. And, you know, if you have an idea, and this is a lot in the editorial process and a lot with the music with Rob Glasper, who's our composer, and Roberto Schaefer, our DP, just allowing the people that I had hired to do what they did in the same way that Miles did. And I wanted to, you know, feel like I was going out and getting band members. You know, I wanted to say, okay, well, you play light. You know, you're gonna play scene right now. You're gonna play cutting. That's and let them bring that to me and let me react to it.
Black Satin, performed by Miles Davis, from the soundtrack to the film Miles Ahead. Don Cheadle took cues from the music of Miles Davis while putting together the film.
It's cinematic. It's always felt like, to me, it's music storytelling. And I always saw scenes in my head when I would listen to Miles' music, whether it was Bitches Brew or Kinda Blue or Circle in the Round or, you know, all of his music, for me, always felt like storytelling in a way. And we wrote with Miles' music a lot. So it was one thing having to try and sift through and select from the best of the best. But, you know, then it was another thing about clearing it. Sometimes you'd pick a song and they'd go, yeah, he didn't really write that one. And there was a lot of tunes that we would come across that Miles had his name on that he was not the sole author of. So that was a very interesting journey as well. But we were very fortunate to have, you know, Rob Glasper, who composed this, and the musicians that he plays with. And when we needed things to bridge things, they would often play, but they could play in the style of those musicians, and it would, you know, would be seamless. When we could use Miles, we'd use Miles, but sometimes we weren't able to use Miles, and we'd either write something or play something, and Rob was just very important to that process for us. And Keon Harold, who was the trumpet player who, you know, doubled a lot of the performing for Miles, was also performing magic.
Composer and pianist Robert Glasper.
We had to try to do our best to make the audience believe that the people on screen are playing. So rather than us recording something and having those guys try to mimic what we're playing, which is harder, I just told the guys, you guys play whatever you want, and we will put the music over it. It's easier for us to mimic y'all. You know what I mean? So that was the thing, because the stuff we recorded was some hard stuff. You know, it was hard to get to really like translate for other cats to do. You know, I have some extremely high level musicians playing, so it's a lot easier for, you know, us to mimic someone else playing than the other way around. You know what I mean? And it went a lot smoother, and it's more believable, you know, when you watch it.
He was doing stuff that wasn't possible. And I never told him how hard it was, because I don't think he could have done it. If I said, what you're doing, actually, you can't do. What we do in movies is we play to the playback, you know. We mime to what you guys are doing, not the other way around. But they did it.
Junior's Jam, composed by Robert Glasper for the film Miles Ahead. Robert Glasper has been composing for a long time, but Miles Ahead was his film scoring debut.
Very, very first film, yep. I had no idea what I was doing. It's awesome. Half of this score, you know, I was in Europe on tour while doing this. That's kind of what made it hard. So I had to learn how to have a studio on the road so I can send ideas back and forth to Don while on tour. That's what I did, and it was actually hard, because Don was also so busy, you know, taping House of Lies. So he'll send me an idea and be like, I kind of want it like this, and then I'll do like 10. He'll be like, no, that's not it, you know. And then the 11th one is like, there it is, you know. So
once they finally were away from other projects, Robert and Don got down to work on the score.
What was hard about it was a lot of the music I did, there was no scene attached to it. I couldn't watch anything. So Don would just explain to me what's in his head. And, you know, so that's hard to convey, you know what I mean, if you've never seen it, you know, because it hasn't been shot, you know. And then I'll do it. And then it's, you know, after a few times, you know, he'll be like, that's it. That's the beauty of, I mean, having Don as director, because he knows what he wants because he's also very, very musical. He plays a few instruments, you know. He actually learned how to play the trumpet for this movie. Like, he shed it for 6 years, you know. So when we would talk about music, I could really talk to him like a musician. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he didn't know what he was talking about. So that's what made it great and hard because he was very particular because he knows what he wants, so which makes it harder. I prefer to work with a director who knows nothing about music. It makes my job a lot easier. Just throwing it out there. If you know nothing about music, call me. I'm your guy. No, but that's what made it great.
Francescence, composed by Robert Glasper for the film Miles Ahead. Coming up, more conversation with Don Cheadle and company about making the film. I'm Josh Jackson, and you're listening to Miles Ahead. We hope you're enjoying Miles Ahead, a documentary about the film starring Don Cheadle. I'm Josh Jackson. Here on WVTF, your public radio station, we receive support from JSW Financial, educating clients about global economic factors affecting retirement planning and wealth. JoelSWilliams.com. We also receive support from Charlottesville's Paramount Theater. Barbara Kingsolver hosts an Earth Day conversation on behalf of Virginia Organizing, April 22nd at the Paramount. Tickets at theparamount.net. Finally, we thank ATW Productions, presenting Totally Rad Roanoke, featuring Huey Lewis and the News, April 20th in Elmwood Park. Details at atwproductions.com. Miles Ahead continues in a moment here on WVTF. Welcome back to Miles Ahead. I'm Josh Jackson. Don Cheadle included as wide a range of Miles Davis music as possible in the film. And when you're talking about Miles, that's a very wide spectrum. He hopes it sparks a curiosity for learning and hearing more.
I mean, yeah, my hope is that, first of all, that people, you know, hear all of the different music that this man produced. And, you know, funk, rock, jazz, bebop, swing, you know, he touched all of that. and is the underpinning of a lot of the music that you hear today. You know, I don't, without Miles Davis, there's no Kendrick Lamar, you know, so that kind of thing, I hope people internalize and are curious about it. And I hope people want to kind of find out more about him. And, you know, like Miles said, if you want to know me, listen to my music. And that's what I would love if people walked away with a desire to get more involved with his music.
Composer Robert Glasper often bridges jazz and hip hop in his music. Miles Davis is an inspiration for that.
There's not many musicians like him at all that really like glided through so many decades of different kinds of music and led in that decade every time. You know, he was a leading voice in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, still around in the early 90s, and changing so much, you know, changing so much with the times. He's a cat that put on so many young musicians. He was always around young, vibrant musicians because, you know, those cats were the fresh sound, and he never wanted to sound stale, and he always wanted to keep the music moving. You know what I mean? He's one of the only cats that really kept jazz alive. You know, he had so much respect, so people respected him, so he could do something different, and people would be like, okay, well, it's Miles, and kind of set the trend, and people start doing it. You know, so without him, jazz would be probably older than it really is. I mean, sounding, you know, people, you know, tend to want to put it in a museum kind of early and kill it. You know, Miles is just all about change. And, you know, he said, if it's not moving, it's dead. He wants to play music for the people and for more than just the jazz audience. You know what I mean? And so because of him, you have artists like me. That's the thread I'm cut from. You know, he started all this stuff, and, you know, and now you have a Kendrick Lamar. That's real. I think if Miles was alive, he'd be recording with Kendrick Lamar. He would have been on the Pimp a Butterfly if Miles was around. You know, totally.
Hey, Kendrick, I think the drums play a little bit behind the beat on that one.
That was my first Miles impression ever. Oh, Jazz Police gonna love that one.
So What? Performed by Miles Davis from the soundtrack to the film Miles Ahead. Miles avoided being pinned down, calling what he did social music instead of the narrow jazz label.
But if we could go back a bit for context and explore your earlier stuff, modal jazz, and its influence...
I like that word, jazz. Don't call it jazz, man. That's a made-up word.
Right.
Trying to box somebody in. Don't call my music jazz.
All right.
It's social music.
Well, I think he, you know, really eschewed those definitions about who and what he was. And it's something, too, that was funny that Wynton said to me. He's like, people wanted to jump all over Miles because he stopped playing jazz or didn't play jazz. And he's like, he never said that's what he was going to do. That's how people needed to feel comfortable about him. As we well know that people need to put you in a box. People need to find a way to quickly, even more so now with social media and, you know, 24-hour news cycle. It's like, I've got to get a quick read on you so I know where to stick you and know how to think about you. And Miles just didn't want any of that. And to him, the social music idea really was about, I am current. I want to play the music of the day. I want to be messing with the sonics of the day. And I want to play with people who are changing music and pushing it forward. So, you know, jazz is something for him, I believe, that felt like it was done. And for him, it had been done. You know, for him, he was it. For a lot of people, like, you are jazz. You know, you are the definition of it. So someone as sort of restless and uncomfortable with stasis as Miles was, I think, you know, it was important to him to move past that idea quickly.
Pianist and composer Robert Glasper.
The reality is, what percentage do you think that if I played Drake for my grandmother, she'd love it? You know what I mean? Like, what percentage do you really think I have? You know, I'd probably give it 3%. You know, she's not gonna love Drake because it's a generational gap. So when you flip it around and try to play, you know, Charlie Parker for, you know, somebody that's, you know, 19 that didn't go to college for jazz, it's the same thing. The reality is they're probably not gonna like it because they have no reference whatsoever. You have to be a realist when it comes to that thing. So if, you know, if you're trying to, you know, be relevant, stay relevant, you have to dibble and dabble a little in what's actually going on right now. You know what I mean? Which was the genius of Miles. That's what he always did. That's what he said. If you want to hear the same stuff, that's what recordings are for. Go back and listen.
Backseat Betty, performed by Miles Davis from the soundtrack to the film Miles Ahead. Miles Davis was a complex person, to say the least. The music always came first, and that often left people in the wake. Don Cheadle.
I think it happens with, you know, a lot of creative people who are on their way to feel like there's something that's pulling them toward some calling that they have. There's a lot of narcissism and selfishness and all of those things that are in there as well. And if you put somebody on the couch, you know, and their therapist could probably tell them a lot of things about what also is going on. But I think that those kinds of quests that writers, artists, philosophers, musicians, painters, all of that, that there's probably some portion of it where you could say a lot of these people are on the spectrum. You know, there's some dissociative nature to it as well, where you're more comfortable dealing with that than dealing with people, potentially. And a lot of vulnerability, too, that a lot of times these personas are created to protect themselves. They're slaves to their master, which is the thing that they're trying to figure out, which is that, you know, nebulous thing that they're out there hunting that they only know when they get it.
Miles's nephew, Vince Wilburn Jr.
He sacrificed. He sacrificed family. He sacrificed marriage. It was the music. It was always about the music and moving the music forward, you know. He was the first one to wake up in the morning, last one to go to sleep at night. He, you know, being around him, you couldn't help but you wanted to better yourself on your instrument and musically, you know. And he knew so much. He knew about cooking and music and cars and fashion and, you know, he would tell you how to save your money, invest your money. I mean, he was brilliant. And it was just brilliant to be around that energy, you know. This is just a man who cared about the music and changing. He didn't want to look back, you know, always moving the music forward. That's it, you know, that was Uncle Miles.
Thank you. Duran, performed by Miles Davis from the soundtrack to the film Miles Ahead. Miles Ahead was produced by Paul Chufo for Joyride Media. Our executive producers are Carmelo Perrone and Eric Molk. Our associate producer is Andy Kahn. All songs on this program can be found on the Legacy Recordings release Miles Ahead, original motion picture soundtrack. Miles Ahead is a film by Don Cheadle from Sony Pictures Classics. I'm Josh Jackson, and thanks for listening.